This morning's worship is inspired by February being Black History Month, a remembrance with origins dating back to 1926. The celebration of Black History Month is meant to educate the American people about African American cultural backgrounds and achievements. There is debate about the appropriateness of having a month set aside this way. African American history, after all, is American history, and it should be remembered and honored all year round, not separated and set aside for just one month of the year. This is true, and we are still, most of us, far more familiar with the history and accomplishments of white people. Not only that, but we in American culture need reminding to study and learn any history. So to me, Black History Month is a reminder and an invitation to revisit some of the stories from our history and to reflect on how these stories inform who we are today. The readings you have heard this morning are from some of our African American Unitarian Universalists, ministers and lay leaders, and there's more information about these writers in the insert in your bulletin, and I hope you'll take time to read about them. So the stories I'm going to share are about some of our African American Unitarian Universalist ancestors. So I want us to be aware that it's, of course, a complex thing for a predominantly white group of people to claim a multiracial history. We don't want to fall into the all too common trap of claiming African American accomplishments, accomplishments almost always made in the face of racism. We don't want to claim these accomplishments as entirely our own. That would be a racist act all over again. And so part of the story we tell has to be the story of racism, not just the accomplishments. And so that's where the wrestling comes in, because we have stories to tell about Unitarian Universalism, Universalist racism. And all of us, white people and people of color, all of us have to own that part of Unitarian Universalist history also. We are all of us in the room wrestling with a history of actions we can be proud of and actions we are not proud of. That's kind of how family history works. So I want you to hear these stories as stories of beloved ancestors, our spiritual ancestors, and in these stories we will recognize ourselves and feel proud at times. We may feel disappointed, but we will hopefully know ourselves just a bit better. We do have a multiracial history, and we will be strengthened knowing that our ancestors' work paved the way for us to be here today. So our first story is of Fanny Barrier Williams. Like a good UU, she has three names. Born in 1855 in Brockport, New York, Williams attended school with white classmates and was the first African-American, male or female, to graduate from the State Normal School, which is now the State University of New York at Brockport. After the Civil War, she soon faced racial prejudice, working as a teacher to newly freed slaves in the South. And when she moved to Boston to study piano at the New England Conservatory of Music, she was asked to leave because white classmates objected to her presence. Williams wrote of that experience, "I never quite recovered from the shock and pain of my first bitter realization that to be a colored woman is to be discredited, mistrusted, and often meanly hated." By 1887, Williams and her husband were living in Chicago, where they were leaders in the African American community. Williams became the director of art and music for the African American Study Club, and together with her husband helped to found Provident Hospital, which exists to this day. The hospital had black and white staff and clientele, and a nurse's training school for black students. Williams attended All Souls Unitarian Church, where she met Celia Woolley, a white woman who would become a lifelong friend. Woolley invited Williams to join the exclusive Chicago Women's Club, and both were surprised when the members claimed the inclusion of a black woman would defile the organization. After a year of heated debate, Fannie Barrier Williams was voted into the Women's Club by a decisive majority. She would remain the group's only African American member for the next 30 years. Around this same time, Williams also began to gain attention for her controversial speeches. As someone with access to white audiences, she used that privilege to speak forcefully about issues of importance to African American women. At the World Parliament of Religions in 1893, she criticized Christians for their complicity with slavery, including their use of the Bible to support slavery. She called for religion to take an active role in improving conditions for African Americans. She also argued to the World's Congress of Representative Women, a mostly white audience, in favor of education and training for black women. These speeches made Williams a nationally known writer and lecturer. Williams' successes and accomplishments are lengthy. She helped found what would become the National Association of Colored Women. She helped create the Frederick Douglass Center in Chicago, an integrated social center that offered educational and cultural programs to the local community. She helped establish the Phyllis Wheatley Home, a place for young black women to stay, be protected, and find employment when they first moved to the city. She was active in the movement to gain legal rights and the vote for all women. When Susan B. Anthony died in 1907, Williams was the only African American woman to give a eulogy at the National American Women's Suffrage Association Convention. Williams was a founding member of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and she helped found the Chicago Urban League. And I could go on, actually. In short, Fannie Barrier Williams is one of these completely intimidating historical Unitarians who changed the world for the better. What moves me about her life's work is that she used what power and privilege she had to fight the social injustices around her. She had the courage to stand before white audiences and name the injustices she saw. She could have used the privilege of her education and financial security to live a life of genteel ease, but instead she chose to work tirelessly for social reform. She was awesome. Her family home in New York is now a state historical site, and rightly so. So our next story is about our ancestor, Egbert Ethelred Brown. And this is a more complicated story to tell and a harder story to hear. He was the first African American to be ordained as a Unitarian minister, and it was no easy accomplishment, as you will hear. He was born and raised in Jamaica, where Unitarianism as a religious denomination did not have a presence. He had a Unitarian conversion experience as a young boy at church, suddenly realizing that the idea of a Trinitarian God was strange, to use his word. He soon after found a copy of William Ellery Channing's famous sermon on Unitarian Christianity and began to read other books about Unitarianism. Brown wrote, "As a result, I became a Unitarian without a church." It wasn't until the year 1900, at the age of 25, that Brown pursued his call to ministry. He applied to the African Methodist Episcopal, AME, Church of America, which had started doing work in Jamaica. And he also wrote to Meadville Theological School, one of the Unitarian seminaries. He was accepted into the AME Church. His reply from the president of Meadville was that, as Brown describes, the school did not conduct a correspondence course, and that therefore I would have to come to Meadville. and that as there was no Unitarian church in America for colored people, and that as white Unitarians required a white minister, the president... The president of Meadville was unable to predict what my future would be at the conclusion of my training. I'm going to stop for a moment so we can hold our grief about that. This is not the reply many of us would have hoped for, right? 116 years later, we know that there are still prohibitive challenges for people of color entering the Unitarian Universalist ministry. Despite the difference in acceptance, hospitality, and encouragement from these two denominations, Brown decided he was, was under moral and spiritual compulsion to be a minister only of that church in which he would be absolutely honest, end quote. He continued to correspond with the president of Meadville and was eventually accepted as a special 2-year student of Meadville Theological School. The details of Brown's many struggles are documented in Mark Morrison Reed's book, Black Pioneers in a White Denomination. There is much for us to grieve in his story. As Morrison Reed writes, given the obstacles he faced, it is remarkable that he became a Unitarian minister at all. It took him 10 years and 3 tries to get from Jamaica to Meadville. After finally completing seminary and being ordained, he returned to Jamaica to begin his work as a Unitarian missionary, hoping to start his own congregation there. He initially received some financial support from the American Unitarian Association, but this support was never substantial enough nor reliable enough for a Unitarian church to take hold. Documents from that time period indicate that the Unitarian Associations providing Brown funding were tentative in their support of his ministry and suspicious of Brown himself. It is also clear that Brown's enthusiasm for and persistence in his work became annoying to those in a position to support him. Morrison Reed's analysis of the situation concludes the following about the leaders of the American Unitarian Association at this time period. Their view of blacks was so limited that they never seriously believed that Unitarianism could be grasped by them. This attitude undermined Brown's mission from the outset. While Brown struggled to build greater support for his mission in Jamaica, the association's officers were questioning whether such a mission could ever succeed. End of that quote. There remains no Unitarian church in Jamaica to this day. Brown left Jamaica for New York in 1920 at the age of 45. He would spend the next 36 years of his life struggling to found a Unitarian church in Harlem. As in Jamaica, he received very little support from the American Unitarian Association. He supported himself at times as an elevator operator and as a speaker for the Socialist Party. At one point, Brown was removed from the ministerial roles until he contacted the ACLU, and then he was reinstated. It's not all bad news. Although Brown struggled to make a living, he did start a church in Harlem and was a prominent community leader there. In 1937, a change in leadership at the American Unitarian Association brought in a different racial attitude. And with it, Brown enjoyed more collegial support than he had previously. But his church never flourished, and there is no Unitarian church in Harlem today. Morrison Reed writes, "Time seems to have conspired against Ethel Red Brown. How could any one man who was more often undermined than helped by the very people he turned to for support overcome the effects of two world wars, the Great Depression, black and white racism, classism, black Christian orthodoxy, a woeful family life, and his own personal idiosyncrasies? It was too much to expect Brown to have hammered success out of this, but it was not enough to keep him from trying." End quote. Brown's story is not as uplifting as Williams, but I wanted to share it because it seems to me so quintessentially Unitarian. This man would not take no for an answer. He never stopped trying to achieve his goal. He never stopped asking for support, and he never gave up on Unitarianism. He was awesome. He reminds me of Michael Servetus, the original stubborn Unitarian, burned at the stake in 1553 because he just wouldn't stop trying to make his point. We Unitarian Universalists come from a long line of spiritually stubborn people. I think back on that moment of choice for Brown, the AME Church of America, acceptance and welcome, the easy choice, the obvious choice. But for Ethelred Brown, that would have been the wrong choice, because there was no integrity in following a religious path he didn't believe in. The power and privilege that Williams used was never available to Brown, even though he was male, even though he was working several decades later than Williams. He was dark-skinned, where she was light-skinned. He was Jamaican, where she was born, raised, and educated in New York. And perhaps most importantly, he did not seem to have the charm needed to overcome racist and paternalistic attitudes of the time. A black man in the early 1900s could not afford to be disliked. In contrast, Lewis McGee, coming 30 years after Brown, enjoyed a very different career as a Unitarian minister. By 1948, he was installed as the first minister of the Free Religious Fellowship, a predominantly black Unitarian church in Chicago. That congregation remains in existence today. In 1961, McGee was the first black man to be called as the senior minister of a white Unitarian church. Times had changed. So, to close out this remembrance of some of our history, I want to name a few more significant milestones for African American Unitarian Universalists. In 1889, Unitarian Maria Baldwin became the first African American woman principal in the United States. In 1892, Unitarian Frances Ellen Watkins Harper became the first African-American woman novelist to be published. In 1894, Unitarian Florida Ruffin Ridley co-founded the first African-American women's civic organization. In 1966, appointed by President Lyndon Johnson, Unitarian Universalist Minister Yvonne Seon became the first African-American director of the United States delegation to UNESCO, an agency of the United Nations. In 1968, UU Diane Carroll became the first African-American to play the central character of a television series. And in 2001, William G. Sinkford, as president of the UUA, became the first African-American to head a traditionally white denomination. These are some of our stories. May we remember them and use our power and privilege to make the world a better place. These are our stories. May we remember them and offer support to the enthusiastic and persistent. These
are our stories. May we remember them and never give up. Amen and blessed be.